Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. Now you're all cleansed and pure from a week of eating only unleavened bread and receiving the blessing of God, Hashem, for a kosher and successful year. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, your host. We're still here. You're tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. The parsha this week is Shmini. If you remember, before Passover, we left you with the building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the desert. And then the Torah described the priests and their clothing and their duties. Well, in this week's parsha, the priests begin actually carrying out their assigned duties. And this all begins on the eighth day after the 7 days of inauguration. And a great fire from God comes down and consumes the offering on the altar, which meant it was accepted. It's in this parsha where we learn about the famous story of two of Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, who offered a strange fire before God and were consumed from within. Their bodies intact, but their souls were back with God. Just getting a little bit too close on the JE. But that leads to a long discussion about these two and how their new duties and how they handled themselves. And you got to go read that parsha and the commentaries to find out all the exciting insider details. It's also in this parsha God details the kosher laws and the laws of the mikvah or the ritual bath. And speaking of bathing, our staff is ready to bathe you in the best in educational Jewish radio with Musical Moish, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, and Mr. Vorda Lynn. So sit back and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in Pennsylvania. Our special guest this week is the executive director and founder of the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, Aaron Zellman. Who's going to be discussing the new proposed restrictive gun legislation that's being proposed in Pennsylvania. Of course, criminals could care less about these new laws, but we'll examine how they'll impact the Jewish community and what you can do about it straight ahead. Of course, we'll have your community announcements and mazel tovs along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio coming up on the half hour. And don't forget to take time now to support Jewish radio in Pittsburgh. You can do it. You can sponsor your favorite segment each week. Send an email to jewishexperience@verizon.net or give us a call at 412-979-5770 and we'll let you in on all the details. And you know, if you want to hear us on the air each week, you need to kind of chip in a little bit and help us do it to it. And we enjoy doing it, but we do need your financial support. Just to let you know, Rabbi Goldwasser's Torah lesson is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo, and the community news and announcements is sponsored by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. The popular Feminine Perspective is sponsored by Lens Landscaping, and Rabbi Eisen's Moment in Jewish History still available for sponsorship. Rabbi Goldwasser's popular story segment is sponsored by Roll It In. Remember, if you enjoy listening to the program, you are critical in helping us continue to do this, this kind of, as we call, shlichus, so this kind of work that we enjoy doing here for you. As always, we thank our regular sponsors, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Simcha Orchestra, led by our own Musical Moishi, and Artistic Photography. Don't forget to ask for a special gift of a beautiful refrigerator magnet that is yours free when you call us at 412-979-5770 or sending us an email at jewishexperience@verizon.net. Candlelighting time this week, 7:38 p.m., so sit back and relax. We have 6 more weeks of beautiful a cappella music to relax you as we count down the days to receiving the Torah on the holiday of Shavuos. My Dani Lefanecha Melecha Haidikaya
Secha Yisrael
Ani Birob Chatecha Avo Beis
Rabbi Goldwasser's Parsha segment this week is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo in honor of the Refua Shlema of Klal Yisrael for the healthy recovery of all the people of Israel. And now, our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This week, we begin the study of Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos begins, Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah from Har Sinai. The commentators ask, did then Moshe receive the Torah from a mountain? Moshe received the Torah from Hashem. One of the answers that are given has a very important lesson for us. Moshe Rabbeinu had something in common with Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai was a low mountain. It was very humble. And therefore, this is why Hashem chose to give the Torah on it. So too, Moshe Rabbeinu, we are told in the Torah, was the most humble of all men. And this is the reason why Moshe merited to be the one to receive the Torah from Hashem and bring it to the Bnei Yisrael. We see this idea also regarding the Torah that we will learn from Moshiach in the future. Regarding those days, the Torah tells us, Umolo ha'aretz deyo es Hashem, the earth will be filled with the knowledge of Hashem, kamayim layom mechasim, as the waters cover the seabed. Just as when a person goes towards the end of the sea, there is just a small amount of water there, because the bottom of the sea is very high. As a person continues walking into the sea, and the seabed gets lower and lower, more water is able to fill it. The same situation is by studying Torah. Torah is godly, and therefore, the more humble a person is, the more they are able to receive and understand Hashem's Torah.
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time, and it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience,
Shieiris Yisroel, V'al Yoivad Yisroel, Bo'o Imrim Shiva Yisroel.
Now it's time for A Moment in Jewish History with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's great disciples carried on his legacy. Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, who became the rabbi of the Russian capital of St. Petersburg, compiled the master's writings into a book called Ar Yisrael. This work is the primary source for Rabbi Yisrael's Mussar system, as he did not leave any formal writings on the subject. The Mussar movement found its strongest adherence among scholars, particularly in the Lithuanian yeshivas. Three main schools of Mussar eventually predominated and produced leaders: Kelm, Slobodka, and Novardik. The Kelm school of Mussar. Rabbi Simcha Zissel Ziv, a disciple of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, founded the Kelm school of Mussar, becoming affectionately known as the Alter from Kelm. Careful never to eat a food for which he had a craving, after fasting he ate small bony fish in order to break his desire to eat and to acquire the character trait of patience. In 1862, he established a yeshiva in his hometown of Kelm, Lithuania, to perpetuate the doctrines of his great teacher. Kelm stressed discipline, harmony, order, organization, and control. It strove to produce students whose intellect always controlled their emotions and who never lost themselves no matter what the situation. Kelm valued the power of concentration, producing calm, rational, ordered individuals who were at peace with themselves and others, whose piety meshed with all aspects of their environment and whose intelligence led them. Although the Kelm Yeshiva was very small, consisting of fewer than 50 students, some of the greatest figures in the 20th century Mussar movement studied there. Spiritual giants such as Rabbi Yeruchim Levovitz, Mashgiach, spiritual advisor of Mirror Yeshiva in Europe, Rabbi Nassim Tzvi Finkel of Slobodka Yeshiva, and the saintly Rabbi Chatzkel Levenstein, Mashgiach in the Mirror Yeshiva after Rabbi Yeruchim's death, and later in the great Panevez Yeshiva in Bnei Barak in Israel. Several incidents offer a glimpse of the greatness that was Kelm. In the middle of the afternoon break, the students were required to come to a study session lasting exactly 5 minutes. Its purpose was to accustom them to value time and to concentrate their thoughts quickly. Once a visitor forgot his cane in the Kelm Yeshiva. When he returned for another visit 13 years later, having long despaired of recovering the cane, he found it hanging in the same spot where he had left it. Another time, there was a great commotion outside the window of the yeshiva. Not one of the students interrupted their prayers by turning their heads to look. This is Rabbi Yosef Eising wishing you a happy and healthy Shabbos.
This week's news segment is brought to you by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. When your requirements call for replacement windows or glass block, call Ed at 412-848-2262. That's 412-848-2262.
Now, from the Israel National Radio Newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
Sunday marks the first of the biweekly meetings between Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and PLO Chairman Mahmoud Abbas, as agreed upon recently with United States Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. They are expected to discuss PLO demands for the release of terrorists and other prisoners in return for kidnapped soldier Gilad Shalit. Other topics on the agenda include continuing violations of the Gaza ceasefire by terrorists and the smuggling of weapons into Gaza. On Monday, Abbas will begin a tour of Jordan and European countries, where he will continue to try to convince leaders to back demands for allowing millions of Arabs who claim Israel as their home to move to the Jewish state. Marwan Barghouti, one of the prisoners whose release has been requested, his 5 life sentences for directing terrorist attacks that killed Israelis is not within the definition of actually having murdered Israelis, according to Ami Ayalon, who is leading the race to unseat Defense Minister Amir Peretz as Labor Party chairman. The former head of the Shin Bet National Security Agency telling Israeli government radio that Barghouti's status is a political matter and that his being released depends on government and intelligence reports. Member of Knesset Ayalon backing the freeing of other terrorists who are considered as having blood on their hands if intelligence officials are convinced that they will not return to terror. He did not refer to studies that show that many free terrorists immediately return to carrying out attacks against Israelis. Ayalon and fellow candidate Ofer Pinas-Paz have called on Peretz to take the party out of the Kadima coalition if the cabinet votes on Sunday to allow Jews to remain in Peace House between Hebron and Kiryat Arba, south of Jerusalem. A majority of the cabinet opposed to removing the residents, even if every labor minister votes to uproot the house. Peretz saying he hopes talks with Syria will resume soon. The defense minister saying he believes the Syrian option should be kept open, despite the data Israel is receiving on Syria's readiness for war, according to the Jerusalem Post. Shas member of Knesset Nissim Ze'ev has asked Syrian-American Ibrahim Suleiman to help bring the remains of Eli Cohen to Israel for burial, more than 4 decades after Cohen was hanged by Syria for spying. The Damascus government has refused to transfer Cohen's remains. The request during Suleiman's appearance before the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee regarding unofficial diplomatic negotiations conducted with former Director Alon Liel of the Foreign Ministry. On Wednesday, Suleiman met with Cohen's brother-in-law, Sami Michael, as well as with Rina Heber, the mother of soldier Guy Heber, who disappeared near the Golan Heights, which Syria wants back. Defense officials have warned that Hamas might split into multiple terrorist factions in the near future, which can endanger negotiations for Shalit's release and complicate future contacts with the PLO. One branch would be headed by Damascus-based arch-terrorist Khaled Nashal, who wants to gain complete control of the PLO. A second route would be headed by Ahmed Jabri, a senior Hamas terrorist in Gaza. The third group would be headed by Sayed Sayam, a former PLO minister who has criticized Mashal and PLO Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh of Hamas for agreeing to share control of the PLO with Abbas's Fatah faction. The Balad Israeli Arab Party has drafted top lawyers from around the world to come to Israel on Sunday for an appeal to the High Court of Justice to force the General Security Service to rescind a gag order surrounding the details of an investigation against member of Knesset Azmi Bashara, who has confirmed that he plans to resign from the parliament. In an interview to Army Radio, Balad Knesset member Jamal Zahalka says the outspoken Bashara's media silence has been imposed by the gag order, and in Zahalka's words, believe me, when the gag order is removed, he will not stop talking. Bashara in Jordan, where he reportedly has met with Foreign Minister Abdullah Hatib and brought up ideas that could change the nature of relations between Israel and its Arab population, according to Jordan's Ammon news agency. Postal Service employees beginning a general strike Sunday. The workers have been conducting a partial strike and intend to intensify the protests this coming week. All post office branches closed from Sunday until further notice. Alan Kahane was holding a thick research file on Al-Qaeda terrorist leader Osama bin Laden when his September 11th flight was grounded. He tells why stronger action is needed against Iran and other reasons why U.S. policy in the Middle East is misguided, with Tovia Singer on demand on the internet at IsraelNationalRadio.com. Shabbat Kaf Vav, the 26th of Nisan on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast cooler and rainy Friday with hail, thunderstorms, and the risk of flooding in low-lying areas in the southern and eastern portions of Israel. On Shabbat, local morning rain in the north and center, otherwise partly cloudy with temperatures rising Sunday and Monday. In Jerusalem, Friday, 14 degrees centigrade, 57 Fahrenheit. At the Red Sea, 24 degrees centigrade, 75 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
Well, we have one mazel tov here as we get into the Sfira period just before the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Jay and Margaret Angel, in honor of the upcoming marriage of their daughter Betsy to Yehuda Sherman. And, of course, Yehuda's parents, part of the Simcha, are Katie and Bella Sherman. And with the winter behind us, time to get your kids ages 3 to 11 registered in Camp Gan Yisrael for a summer of a lifetime. Camp runs from July 9th to August 17th at the Yeshiva Boys and Girls School buildings. With swimming and trips off campus, for more information, visit cgipittsburgh.com or call Rabbi Shmuley Rothman at 412-715-4883. 412-715-4883. The meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meets at Shari Torah every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The program is a recovery group, people who cannot control their eating and or their weight. It's also very successful, but it's also not for women only. Men are invited. So for more information, call Ilan at 412-422-2224. If you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, you can do it. Just give us a call at 412-979-5770 or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And don't forget, candlelighting time this week, 7:38 p.m. Okay, this afternoon we've got a very difficult subject that we're going to be tackling. We've got a guest with us today, Aaron Zellman, who is the founder and executive director of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, an organization that's been around since 1989. And they have two main goals. One is to destroy gun control, and the other is to promote the Bill of Rights for all citizens. So, Aaron, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'm glad to have you. And before we even get started, I mean, you call yourself Jews for the Preservation, and this is a Jewish radio program, and yet your two goals don't seem to concern yourself with Jews per se. So why the name Jews?
Well, they do. First of all, you know, Jews have suffered tremendously from gun control schemes. So we think we have a moral responsibility to make sure that those policies that have been used in the past to help murder Jews, that those policies die. Two, you know, we have, there are certain people within the leadership, as they call themselves, the leadership of the Jewish community, that promote gun control schemes. And we want the rest of the world to know that not all Jews are in lockstep with the Frank Lautenbergs of the world or the Charlie Schumers.
Good.
The Dianne Feinsteins. And then there's a whole long list, as a matter of fact.
Sure.
In fact, my two senators from Wisconsin, Herb Kohl and Russ Feingold, are still, you know, supporting gun control schemes. So.
Absolutely.
Seems to be no shortage of Jews who have not learned from history.
Okay. Well, the main reason we've got you today is there's draconian legislation, as you know, in the state of Pennsylvania, Gun Registration Act of 2007. And it's going to require every gun in Pennsylvania not just to be registered, but would have to be re-registered annually, and it would be a fee of, I think it's $10 per gun per year. And, of course, you know, the whole point of this is, and you'll probably comment on this, is that all this is great, but it's going to be a big burden on honest citizens, while obviously criminals could care less about it.
Well, first of all, none of it's great, because it's not going to accomplish anything positive. From the reports that I've been reading, the politicians who are behind this nefarious scheme are primarily from large cities, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with the crime in those cities, or I guess the underlying factor of the crime in those cities, is that most of the criminals, well, that 80% of the criminals are on probation or parole. And they're not monitoring the criminals. And so somehow, somebody thinks that by trying to harass gun owners and register gun owners throughout the entire state of Pennsylvania, is somehow going to lower crime in the larger cities without making any effort to control the criminals.
Well, isn't it also true, and has been shown even in Washington, probably the most heaviest gun control city, and also New York, that the crime actually goes up the more gun control, or so to speak, confiscation of guns takes place?
Well, you know, if you're in the black market of selling guns, gun control is wonderful.
Exactly.
And so,
no, it's true.
People making good money in New York City and Washington who are supplying black market guns. In fact, a lot of criminals, you know, some people don't realize this, criminals usually don't buy guns anymore. They rent them. And then when they're ready to dispose of the gun, they do it in a different state.
Fascinating. Well, there's always going to be a way to get around it. The key is, and in my opinion, you know, when they had this big problem with terrorism on the airplanes, my answer was, if everybody gets on board, they should each hand them a gun, you know. And if everybody had one, there's always the good guys always outnumber the bad guys. And if the bad guys knew that even if there was some untrained people holding guns, they would probably be less likely to make a move.
Bad guys thought that even 10% of the passengers were armed. The bad guys would learn to behave quickly.
Exactly. So so let's talk a little bit about gun control, because you have been doing this for quite a while, and you had remarked a while back that you had some real hard evidence about where the original gun control legislation came from, and I think it relates to our Jewish audience as well as our non-Jewish audience.
It certainly does. Most people need to understand that prior to 1968, the 1968 Gun Control Act, there was not a great deal of federal gun control laws in America. After 1968, the Gun Control Act of 68 was put through. It was sponsored by the late Senator Thomas Dodd of Connecticut. Now, Tom Dodd had a fascinating background. He had served with the Justice Department at the Nuremberg Tribunal. He had access to all Nazi laws and regulations and publications. And lo and behold, he provided to the Library of Congress the 1938 Nazi gun control laws. And he asked the Library of Congress to translate those laws for him. The Library of Congress did. And the Lewis Coffin, the law librarian of the Library of Congress, put forth a transmittal letter notifying Tom Dodd. And we have that letter, by the way, in our book called Gun Control is the Gateway to Tyranny. And he did indeed inform Tom Dodd that here is the translation of the Nazi gun control laws you asked for. And within that book, we show the side-by-side comparison between the 38 Nazi gun control laws and the 1968 Gun Control Act. Key parts of the Nazi law were transported into the U.S. law. For example, the concept of sporting purposes. That is how the government determines if a firearm can be imported in the United States. Well, the Nazis used the term not suitable for the hunting of fair game. If you look at the registration lists, or the registration books that the Nazis insisted gun dealers keep, and you compare those with the registration books that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms demands American gun dealers keep, it's chilling. You look at some of the other wording throughout the laws, and it's very compelling, and when you look at it, you can't just some people would like to ignore it. The NRA would like to ignore it, but the fact of the matter is the U.S. Gun Control Act is based on Nazi law.
Wow. And the thing is,
it's all documented. This is not a fantasy.
Sure. And it comes down to the concept of, there's two words there, gun control. And I think it comes down to the concept of control. I mean, that's what it's all about. Gun control, somebody mentioned one time, is how you hold and aim and shoot. That's gun control. But any other control is really
it's really people control.
It's really people control. So,
by the way, we're speaking of people control. I think some of your listeners, all of them, really need to realize Pennsylvania now has a new computer system for the whole state. They can track everybody, anywhere, anytime, very quickly. In fact, now that they have the computer system online, they realized 1.4 million warrants are still outstanding in the state of Pennsylvania. Now they know where to find those 1.4 million people and everyone else, including all of your children, whenever they want to, very quickly. So you combine that with this draconian legislation that's even more draconian than the Nazi gun control laws, more draconian than Stalin's gun control laws, and I think people in Pennsylvania had better wake up yesterday.
Yeah, so, okay.
They better wake up. So something nasty is surely afoot.
Sure, and let's say they wake up. What's their next step?
Well, our next step is to make sure people understand. There are several hundred politicians throughout the state. There are several million citizens who give these politicians permission to govern. It's time for several million people to wake up and say, wait a minute, this is a numbers game. There's more of us who are decent people than there are parasitic politicians. It's time to fire them.
Okay, but then these people,
the first step is to develop that mindset. You've had enough of these people. You can live without them. And surely someone else will come along and wants to hold public office. But it's time to get a great big broom out and clean house.
Sure. Now, but a lot of people would say to you, well, that's true. But on the other hand, some of these gun control laws are necessary because we need them for safety. Otherwise, people would run amok.
No, that's really not true because criminals fear armed citizens. Criminals very much appreciate the fact that some people, there are gun control schemes. Makes their job a lot easier. And I can tell you, I was raised in an environment, I was raised in Tucson, Arizona, in the 50s and 60s, and guns are everywhere. And I truly mean everywhere. And we had a very low crime rate.
Okay.
Criminals can be contained, they can be controlled when they realize they're going to suffer instantly. And they'll beg for the police to show up to shuffle them off to the hospital.
Yeah, the key is to get people to listen to that concept and to emotionally get involved with it to the point where they take effective action.
I think what we need to help people understand is that under the laws of Pennsylvania, if you call 911 and ask for police help, if the police can get there and they have time, they'll show up eventually. But no citizen of Pennsylvania is guaranteed protection by the police. Most people don't understand that fact.
Right.
On our website, jpfo.org, we have a book called Dial 911 and Die, and it covers all 50 states. So if you live in Pennsylvania, you cannot demand that the police protect you. If they fail to protect you, you can sue, but you won't win because of sovereign immunity.
So
one of the things that gun owners have to do is to reach out to people who are not gun owners and say, hey, guess what? You dial 911, forget it. The police don't have any legal obligation to come to your door.
Right. Well, they'll make an effort, but...
Well, eventually, but you may be number 20 on the list.
Right. And the criminal's not going to...
Because of all these people who were on parole and probation who are not being controlled.
Okay, so these people that now, let's say they're convinced they've got to make a move, what would you recommend they do first?
Well, I think their next step is they got to tell somebody else. They've got to make sure that this is... The numbers game has to work so that the numbers are on our side. The numbers favor us. So it's important for gun owners to make sure other gun owners understand that a new approach is needed. And so I would encourage gun owners to first reach out to other gun owners, because there are certain gun owners who think, oh, well, this law isn't going to hurt me. I don't care. A little gun control here, a little gun control there, it's okay. We have to get rid of that attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the concept.
The control should be criminal control.
Correct. Okay, well, we are out of time, and I just I wanted to get that out in terms of people's ability that they can make a difference.
Well, they most certainly can, because, again, it's a numbers game.
Right.
There's millions of law-abiding, decent people in Pennsylvania. There's a couple hundred parasitic politicians.
Great. Well, this
time to, clean house.
And if you want to learn more, of course, you can go to your website, jpfo.org. And I understand you do have a lot of halachic information there, a lot of Jewish information about carrying guns on the holidays and how to handle that and a lot of other issues that have to do with Jewish law and guns. Is that correct?
That's true.
So I think it'd be a good idea for people to check that out. And is there a number if they want to join or if they want to get in touch with anybody? Does JPFO have a contact
number? Sure. Our regular office number is 262-673-9745.
Okay.
And join online at jpfo.org if they wish.
Great. Okay.
Well. Our toll-free number during the day is 800-869-1884.
Excellent. Well, Aaron, thank you again for taking some time out of your busy schedule to be with us and to try to enlighten us on how serious this issue really is and to hopefully get some people mobilized. And even as a Jewish community, it's something that especially relates to a Jewish community that
absolutely.
We have to stand up.
Any Jew who is going to tolerate gun control truly has not learned from history.
Exactly. Well, Aaron Zellman, founder and executive director of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. Thank you again. Have a good Shabbos.
My pleasure. Have a good Shabbos.
Bye-bye.
Just a deaf man in the shtiebel, and to everyone's surprise, he comes to shul each Shabbos and he prays with tear-filled eyes. His son, he is a chazan, though his voice he's never heard, but he sits there enjoying every word. He watches every motion, every gesture that he makes, and he stays till the very end, however long it takes. And when the davening is over, he's the first to reach his son, and the deaf man in the shtiebel says, well done.
Now it's right before Yom Kippur, in the shtiebel there is fear. They want to start for Midray, but the chazan's still not there. Oh, the shul is filled with people as the night begins to fall, but the deaf man's chair stands empty by the wall.
Then suddenly the chazan, he comes rushing through the door. He's wearing his white chazan's hat he's never worn before. He pauses for a moment at his father's empty chair, and quietly he wipes away a tear.
And he runs up to the bima, for there's no time left to wait, and half the shul can hear the rabbi ask, how come so late? Oh, just getting ready for Yom Kippur is all he'd say. But now I'm going up to pray.
And he takes his place around it by the holy Torah ring. And in a voice so beautiful, he begins to sing. Oh, every heart is broken. From his kol nidrei that Yom Kippur night.
And when he finished davening, the rabbi asked to tell, what was it he was thinking of that made him sing so well? Well, you knew my dad was deaf, he said, last night he passed away. It's the first time that my father's heard me pray.
And he takes his place around it by the holy Torah ring. And in a voice so beautiful, he begins to sing. Oh, every heart
silver bright from his cold Israel at Yom Kippur night.
Oh, every heart was broken, oh, and every soul burned bright
from his cold Israel at Yom Kippur night.
Feminine Perspective is brought to you each week by Len's Landscaping at 412-372-5215. Len specializes in shrub and tree care and provides free estimates. Len says, I'll treat your land like it was my own. Call Len at 412-372-5215. And now, here's Deborah DeLynn.
A trial by fire. Such is said about the journey something or someone takes that is abounding with hardship. Fire is one of Hashem's most amazing inventions. A helpful servant, yet a greedy master. A light in the darkness, but a powerful destroyer. Such is the nature of fire. Fire, one of the four worldly elements, is often compared to anger and hot-headedness, yet it can also be understood as zeal and enthusiasm. Truly, fire is fascinating. The Tanakh tells us of the heavenly fire that descended only 12 times since the history of the world, 6 times for good and 6 times for punishment. The first fire is the fire of the Mishkan, about which we learn in this week's Parsha, Parsha Shmini. The second fire was the fire of Gideon, when he asked for a sign that he was truly chosen as leader. The third was from Manoach, the father of Shimshon, who slaughtered a calf for the angel after told him that he would have a son. The fourth fire was in the days of David HaMelech, begging Hashem to remove a terrible plague from Bnei Israel. The fifth was for the temple of Shlomo HaMelech, and the sixth fire was for Eliyahu HaNavi, when he was proving the prophets of the Baal wrong before the entire nation. The first fire of punishment was for Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron the high priest, which we learn about in this week's Parsha. The second came when the Jews quarreled with their leaders in the desert. The third came to incinerate Korach and his camp. The fourth was in Iyah's time, and the fifth and sixth fires came through Eliyahu HaNavi against his enemies. Sometimes we think we can understand Hashem's ways. Someone who steals is charged a fine according to Torah. Makes sense. But other circumstances are more difficult to understand, and perhaps the most perplexing episode quoted in the Torah is the incident of Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron a Kohen. The two men brought a strange fire, that is, a fire that did not come from the Mizbeach, the altar. Because of their infraction, they were killed by a fire, which entered their nostril and burned their insides, but left their bodies intact. Their clothes were not even singed. The Midrash says that they were drunk from the party of the dedication of the Mishkan. They wanted to perform their duties in this state, which of course cannot be done. The reason the fire entered their nostril is because the nostril is the area through which the soul is placed when a baby is conceived. The Lubavitcher Rebbe looks at this from a slightly different and more positive view. Nadav and Avihu were drinking heavily, not because of any coarse, mundane reason. They did it because wine elevates the spirit and causes joy, which is necessary to become close to Hashem. When wine alone didn't work, they decided to bring a korban, a sacrifice. When confronted with the heavenly fire, their souls yearned so much to be close to Hashem that their bodies simply lost the will to live. What was wrong with this was that they forgot a very important foundation of Yiddishkeit. When Hashem puts us on this earth, He does so for a reason. It's not up to a person to take it into his hands to die. Rather, he should look to fulfill his mission on earth with joy. Have a good Shabbos.
Na 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 na.
Yedid nefesh, o yov, o vorachamon, mishoyech abdicho, el ritzoynech.
O yoyov, o yoyov, yedid nefesh. Shalom, oh,
shaychadecha el ritzaynecha.
Rabbi Goldwasser's story segment is sponsored by Roladin, where you can get a complete Shabbat dinner for $36.99, which serves four with soup, fish, side orders, challah, and salad. Now accepting orders at 412-521-5555. 412-521-5555. And now, the Jewish Experience Master Storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
There once lived two neighbors, a Torah scholar and a very poor laborer. The scholar would wake before dawn, rush to the study hall, and study for several hours. He would then pray at length and would greet. He would then pray at length with great devotion, hurry home for a quick bite of breakfast, and return to the study hall for more hours of study. After the noon meal, he would go to the market and engage in some minimal dealing, just enough to earn him his basic needs. Then, back to the study hall. After evening prayers and the evening meal, he would again sit over the sacred books till late into the night. His neighbor would also awake early, but his situation did not allow for much Torah study. No matter how hard he struggled to earn a living, he barely succeeded in putting bread on the table. He would pray quickly with the first minyan at daybreak, and then his labor would consume his entire day and the greater part of his night. On Shabbos, when he finally had the opportunity to take a book in his hands, he would soon drop off from exhaustion. When the two neighbors would pass each other in the yard, the scholar would throw the crass person a look of contempt and hurry on to his holy pursuits. The poor laborer would sigh and think to himself, how unfortunate is my lot, and how fortunate is his. We are both hurrying, but he's rushing to the study hall, while I'm off to my mundane burdens. Then it came to pass that the two men concluded their sojourn on earth, and their souls stood before the heavenly court, where the life of every man is weighed upon the balance scales of divine judgment. An advocate angel placed the scholar's many virtues into the right cup of the balance scales. His many hours of Torah study, his meditative prayers, his frugality and honesty. But then came the prosecuting angel and placed a single object on the other side of the scales, the look of contempt that the scholar would send his neighbor's way. Slowly, the left side of the scales began to dip until it equaled, and yes, then exceeded, the formidable load on the right. When the poor laborer came before the heavenly court, the prosecutor loaded his miserable, spiritually void life on the left scales. The advocating angel had but one weight to offer, the sorrowful sigh the laborer would emit when he encountered his learned neighbor. But when placed on the right side of the scales, the sigh counterweighted everything on the negative side, lifting and validating every moment of hardship and misery in the laborer's life. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a good Shabbos.
Wrap up our first week of Sfira after we finish the Passover holidays. A couple of reminders. Camp Gan Yisroel, if you haven't registered your kids yet, it's getting late, need to do it. Call Rabbi Shmuley and Connie Rothman, 412-715-4883. And don't forget the meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, Sunday evening, 7 to 8:30 p.m., Successful Recovery Group. And not for women only. Call Ilan at 412-422-2224. And don't forget to call us if you want to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, 412-979-5770. Or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. So we certainly want to thank Aaron Zellman, who's the executive director and founder of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, for helping defend our right to defend ourselves. And again, as he mentions, if you learn from history, you'll pay close attention to what's going on right now with this draconian gun legislation in Pennsylvania. And, of course, we can't leave without thanking our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, MusicalMoish.com, Dr. Michael Schulman, Mr. Vordelin, and, of course, our engineer, ever faithful, catching me in all kinds of mistakes here and giving you a great show, Jeremy Bossy, otherwise known as Jermel of Bossenstein, for another outstanding show. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week, 7:38 p.m. Till next week, I'm Hirsch DeLynn. Have a wonderful and restful Shabbat. Malachi Elyon, Malachi Elyon.